Welcome to Almost Famous Minute, where we're discussing the 2000 Cameron Crowe film Almost Famous, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from Watchmen Minute.
I'm Megan Bailey from the future Bohemian Rhapsody Minute.
And I'm Alice, and I'm a comic.
Welcome back, both of you, for, I think, a final minute for each of you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go out with a bang, Lester bangs. That's it. That's the only joke I have.
So this is minute 36, and it starts with William watching Penny and Russell leaving the room, and ends with William and Ben Fong Torres discussing Stillwater. So the song is continuing to play here, but it fades out pretty quickly as we see. We don't exactly see them going into the room, do we?
We see the coat hung up.
Yeah.
We see the little, just a little.
Her coat that we very much know is hers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's in there, obviously, and it's very well inferred that Russell would be in there with her, getting the ice, supposedly.
He follows her out of the room. So yeah.
Getting ice. Yeah.
That should become a good euphemism for whatever they might be doing in there, because we really don't know. We don't have a clear picture from this, because that's it sure as heck cuts away at that point. But that's where the deleted scene comes in. So let's just dig into that first here off the bat. It's unusual to get the deleted so far doing this movie this way, the deleted scene. I normally kind of get to it more in the latter half of the minutes usually, but just makes a lot more sense to go right into it. So, Palexia, let's talk about the little thing I was really wanting to get to, what Palexia is doing with William before we get to that part, is she's kind of like preening him. Is that a good word, you think? Or, you know, not quite grooming. I mean, there's a couple little pics we see of, like, maybe, like, you know, a little piece of lint or something, maybe, I guess, on his jacket. But she's just touching all over his jacket. And that really leads you to believe, you know, the thing you were mentioning yesterday, Alice, or last week, last minute, Alice, that she seems to kind of be into him.
Yeah. I think he's into anyone with a pulse.
Yeah.
Well, that leads to one thing we'll see in this lead scene. So let's go into this after all at this point. But as Plexia is saying, I'm just worried about people using her, because she brings out the good side in everybody else. But what does he do for her? It kills me. Do you have any pot?
Yeah.
And William says, no, not on me. She says, do you smoke? He says, no, but I grow it. Yeah, grow. She says, you're funny. But then she continues with this really insulting thing. If you were only taller and English and rich and a guitar player and older, I guess she'd be really into him then.
Yeah.
So just exactly. A little light fawning over him.
Yeah.
And so he said, his nice little reply to that, I'd be somebody else.
That's true. Yeah, I wonder if they are kind of close in age in a way. This kind of made it come off as like maybe she is like a, you know, 16, 17 year old girl.
Definitely, I think so.
Plexi says, "Yeah, good point." And then Jeff Beebe, that's Jason Lee's character, comes by and says to William, "The enemy." You know, that's one more count of the enemy. I don't know how well I'm doing on keeping track of that, really, in the going back and editing process, but I'm gonna
should have been a drinking game.
Yeah, but he says, I'm always around if you want to talk some more, because there's already been the scenes where he was talking. Plexi says, William, bless me, Father, for I may sin tonight. She goes with Jeff at that point, so that's what we have throughout the rest of the movie, that they seem to be an item, a couple, what have you, in the groupie sense. She's definitely has attached herself at this from this point on, but we don't know that in the true theatrical cut that we're really covering here in this show. Then we have then it does do the cut to not what we see, but to inside the room. Well, and actually, I'm sorry. Russell is seen closing the door. And he seems to start kind of making some moves on Penny pretty quick. But she says, how does it end? And I think that's kind of like when she walks over and puts that coat up. But then it, you know, goes back into the room and she said, how does it end? He says, what? And she says, the story about the girl who dumps the guy who has the ex-wife, calls her 100... okay, 5 times, and doesn't even leave a pass in San Diego, a backstage pass. Wake up. I'm retired. I never believed you anyway. You're too good-looking and too talented to be trusted, and everybody knows that. Russell says, you're retired like Frank Sinatra is retired. Miss Penny Lane, let me tell you what rock and roll will miss the day that you truly retire. The way that you turn a hotel room into a home. Which we kind of just saw, you know, that kind of way she entered and so forth. And the way that you pick up strays wherever you go, so that's William and probably some of the other Band-Aids. The way that you know the words to every song, especially the bad ones, mostly the bad ones, that green coat in the middle of summer, the real name that you won't reveal. I could keep going on, but my glass is full. She says, damn. And that's when they then kiss. He says, come to Arizona. She says, never. He says, we leave Thursday morning at 9 a.m. and pack light this time.
Hmm. Yeah, that would have showed, I hate to say it, a bit too much romance, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah, that might have been I don't want to say it because I love romance and romantic seen so much, but maybe that would have been too heavy-handed in their sort of will they or won't they, but probably will story.
Mm-hmm. I think it would have been interesting to have a more concise version because this is probably one of the longer ones. There's one huge long 12-minute long cut that we've actually already. Or, no wait, no, it's coming up in a few minutes here, but
yeah.
But definitely, like I was saying, if they had kept the little, you know, Jeff and Plexia kind of starting to hook up or, you know, get to, you know, to go off to another room and so forth. But a little bit of the rest of that would have been interesting, too, but not necessarily all of it.
Well, I think that there would have also been more dimensions to Penny Lane, because I think I was reading somewhere about like movies that you watch kind of before you become a feminist, and that it's very cool when you watch it, you know, back in 2000, but now you're kind of like, oh, all these women are, you know, there's no character depth to them. Mm-hmm. So it would, I mean, it probably would have been interesting in a sense to have some more depth into, you know, how she is, why she is, who she is, which we do get a bit later. I mean, there was a lot of Kate Hudson crying and feeling deeply mm-hmm. about things later on, but, you know, this would have been a very interesting kind of depth to her.
Yeah, an interesting idea concept for a movie, I think, would be a more from the women's point of view, mm-hmm. And maybe like a prequel to see, you know, how Penny got to where she is at this point.
Yeah. I mean, there are some, you know, I don't want to say there are no important women. I mean, William's mother definitely has a very strong mm-hmm. character. We don't necessarily know, you know, why she is who she is and everything. I mean, we assume because his dad died, I mean, potentially a protectiveness. I don't want to get too, you know, far out into a whole other thing, but you know, yeah, just to have some more dimension to the female characters as they do to some of the rock stars.
Yeah.
But as it is, you know, the way this, like I said, I chose to do this theatrical cut, and it's just William staring at conceiving what they might be doing in there. And it's a pretty quick cut then to William sitting in his bedroom typing, and the phone rings, and the song has started playing, this Easy to Slip by Little Feat. And it's definitely, I'm awfully sure I had never heard it before this movie. And it's a song I was mentioning last minute. We hear it kind of at a decent volume to start, but then it definitely fades down a bit in the mix with a lot of the back and forth dialogue that we get here. But Little Feat is, you know, I mean, I think they're just it seems like they're just a pretty good middle America type band, a bit Southern, a little bit supposedly, but also it's interesting to see that at least on Wikipedia, some of the genres involved, that there are many genres are listed, but some are jazz related, jazz rock and jazz funk.
Is that Rainn Wilson?
Yes, that's right. We do get Rainn Wilson this minute, not talking, so he wasn't in the little script I gave you, but yeah, and he will talk later. That's for sure.
I never realized that before. Mm-hmm. That's funny.
And it's almost like the character he's playing is like Ben Fong Torres here. You know, they're both real life people, similar to Lester. We don't get a lot of real life people, at least that have that big of a role. This is kind of a second biggest role for someone that's a real person. And it's the main point of contact that you know William ends up having with Rolling Stone. So he was almost so close to the very start of the magazine there in the mid to late 60s, essentially 66, 67-ish, I think. He was a head main writer, but then also editor pretty quick as well. And so editors in their role, you know, also being a writer too, but, in an editorial role, he's definitely out looking for people to add on, to become, possibly, normal staff writers, what have you, or...
Mm-hmm.
Or one-offs, depending on how well they do. And William, or you know, really Cameron, Cameron certainly ended up going on and spending a fair amount of time at Rolling Stone. Not necessarily at it, but you know, writing for them. And Ben Fong Torres is played by the actor Terry Chen.
Yeah, that is some bad acting. I just didn't like his acting in this. I don't know what, there was just something off, and just, I mean, as simple as it gets, there was just something off in the way he was delivering his lines. I don't know.
To me, it's almost like he's trying to sound cool.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily all that cool, but himself, but
mm-hmm.
he certainly tries to play the part.
Yeah. I also just think it's hilarious, but also bizarre, the, like, you know, hello, hello, oh, you know, we want you to write for us, hello, you know, like, he just was, you know, and it was like, he heard you before, man, like, suddenly going to a deep voice.
I mean, there is the one line, you know, and that's kind of what I was getting at a moment ago, is when he goes, voice of God, howling dogs, the spirit of rock and roll. You know, it's seemingly, you know, I mean, he's seemingly quoting stuff that William has written.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, he's kind of showing this person that he doesn't know if they're really that legit. You know, he's trying to scope them out a bit, you know, I think. But he's also trying to prove that he's also legit and has actually read his stuff. And he's not, like, calling without having read anything.
The respect is real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
they have this part where, you know, it's this, you know, I think you should be writing for us. Any ideas? And William has this look around the room and trying to come up with a quick answer. You know, it's like, I mean, well, I mean, you must have had it written down on that yellow pad of paper, you know, Stillwater. So it's kind of on his mind.
Was Stillwater a big band in this universe, I guess? I mean, that's
well,
what I was
in this
like...
universe, as you know, as what Ben says back to him, Stillwater, hardworking band, makes good, you know, new album out, their third.
So they knew about them. It wasn't like, okay.
You know, it's
like the Rolling Stone knows about them, that they're not.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
struggling, but they're known. Yeah,
yeah, they're not that underground. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. They've put out a couple albums and.
Yeah, what was William like writing in that it would even come across like Rolling Stone's desk though? That's interesting too.
Well, yeah, I mean, when that okay, that
not,
goes back.
This is not the age of the internet or anything. Yeah. Like I googled you and.
Well, what Ben says is we got a couple copies of your stories from the San Diego Door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what we saw previously in the movie is that, you know, he's been writing for his paper and then he talks with Lester and Lester gives him an assignment.
Yeah.
Now that was, you know, whether or not he truly completed that assignment properly or what have you is kind of really up in the air for me because I mean, he seemed like really he spent all his time with Stillwater and did he actually, did he probably didn't spend any time with any members of Black Sabbath. He probably didn't get that far in and probably wasn't able to make inroads there. But I think the idea for journalists still today, rock journalists, rock critics, is not necessarily to get to know the band so much, but just to go and see them perform and that's it. And or just listen to their albums and singles, what have you. But that's one of the big things that you know appealed to, I think, Rolling Stone was appealing about Cameron Crowe to Rolling Stone is that he was one, this young kid, 15, 16, 17 year old as he aged a little bit while he kept writing for them, but he would get in with the band and he would just write these stories that you know kind of was almost like you know. Real world or you know Big Brother or whatever kind of reality TV shows you might be into you might be familiar with, but you know yeah certainly at points there's some fakiness to them, but things that are put on and other things that are kept quiet like drug usage or what have you or sex with groupies and so forth. underage groupies. I think it's just this matter of this different style, and they were into having someone. It was kind of almost like a middle road between that normal rock journalism that I was just talking about, and versus something that they referenced later on, Hunter S. Thompson, you know, the gonzo journalist, the guy that actually really went balls out and did these crazy things. With whether it was rock bands or this other types of things. Like, I mean, if you've seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, it's this whole dune buggy sequence that, you know, he goes and participates in and what have you.
Yeah.
Well, apparently Rainn Wilson was supposed to kind of be him in the movie, which is interesting.
Yeah, and that is what I was getting to a few minutes ago, was that, I mean, he is based on a real person, but it's not that. You know, a lot of people in certain places online, it certainly does say, oh, he's supposed to be Hunter S. Thompson. Well, not exactly. There was an actual person that he is supposed to be.
Mm. Although, I mean, I guess it kind of speaks to how did any journalism get around? I mean, before, you know, the social medias and the, you know, the Google and all that stuff, too. I mean, you had to find out about each other somehow. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, and there's something that's underground. I mean, it's not from the band perspective, but from the journalism's perspective, it's the idea of zines, you know, that are very, very inexpensively made, copied, not large production numbers.
Yeah.
And then hand it out, you know, from one fan to another, really. The only other last big thing I'd like to mention is just back to Ben Fong-Torres, that it's a little call out to Watchmen Minute that he's almost like a half what we would call Canadian regular, at least these days, supposedly, lately. He apparently splits his time between Los Angeles and Vancouver, and that was where Watchmen was shot, and so a lot of the lower level non-leads or even half supporting character actors in that movie Travis and I ended up calling Canadian regulars that just basically live there and got work as much as they could on a lot of the TV shows like Smallville and Stargate. And
yeah, I'm looking at Terry Chen's filmography because I'm like, I feel like I saw him somewhere, and
you've definitely seen him in things,
but I don't know what else. I mean, I wish I could, I haven't seen Jessica Jones, but I mean, I wish I could. But yeah, and then I'm looking at like I don't think I've seen anything that he's been in, but because I mean there just aren't that many Asian actors out there, especially mainstream wise, and you know, so I'm like, I must have seen him, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Well, and this role is on his Bates
Hotel.
If you ever go to IMDb and look at people's known fors, and it's usually like a listing of four movies / TV shows, and Almost Famous is the fourth one listed there.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Jones and House of Cards and The Expanse. Yeah. The Expanse is vaguely familiar.
He was in Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no snakes for me, thank you.
Stay away from that one.
He was in Chronicles of Riddick. That's a pretty good movie. I like that movie.
So is there anything else for either of you? Any other notes you've made or just things that you're popping in your head here?
No, especially anything like to this minute, I'm trying to think.
The one last thing maybe I would have to say is something we see behind Ben Fong-Torres here in at his desk in his little office that stands out the most. It's right there above his shoulder, An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And they were a little duo comedy team way back in the day. And I think Mike Nichols ended up becoming the director though too.
Mm-hmm. Was William on the tour when he suggested Stillwater? I think so.
No, yeah, that hasn't happened yet. It's because that's how he's going to get on the tour here.
Oh,
And that's where we get the scene in a minute or two. That the long deleted scene of about 12 minutes, where they're listening to "Stairway to Heaven," but it's all you can only find it on YouTube. this scene, Okay, so I think we can. Go to Alice now if we can get your find out about how you, from your favorite personal viewpoint, not what you think is the best band, but what your favorite is of the four bands, Allman Brothers Band, Eagles, Led Zeppelin, and Lynyrd Skynyrd, that are considered to make up the band Stillwater. And you can go least favorite to favorite or vice versa.
Let me see. I see Eagles. I'm gonna pull them all out because I know like one song.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
When you don't know much about a band, then it's probably gonna make your estimation of them a little lower. But that could.
Yeah, I mean Eagles. I mean, they have my favorite Hotel California. I mean, there's more songs, but like I mean when I was 8 years old. This is just a really weird story. But when I was 8 years old, I was on vacation with my parents, obviously not by myself. And I went to a pub thing that they have there. And, I'm this little kid, it was like a karaoke thing. And so My dad tells me that they were looking through, like, oh, you know, NSYNC, Britney Spears, what do you want to sing, little girl? And I'm like, Hotel California by the Eagles, you know, and I just, this is what I sing. But yeah, so, I mean, I love that. I mean, they sing, what else? Desperado, of course. I'm trying to remember what else they do.
Witch A Woman.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Seinfeld.
Oh, that guy looks just like... That guy with the long hair looks just like Russell. That's interesting. In the Eagles.
Oh, in the Eagles, yeah.
Yeah, in the picture. Yeah, look, you know, I just noticed that. I'm like, whoa. That's how you blow it. Yeah, so they're good. Let's see. What was the fourth one? You said Allman Brothers, Eagles, Lynyrd Skynyrd.
And Led Zeppelin.
Oh, of course.
And they're kind of the odd ones out for the four. But there's, yeah. You know, I mean, it's... I think that's a good reason to.
Are they? They're all from the same time period.
Why oh yeah, that's like... for sure. Oh yeah, I mean that. Huh. You know, I mean each one at maybe kind of differing levels of success, a bit at this point in 73. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So Eagles, I would probably put at the top, and then Led Zeppelin. I mean. I first heard Immigrant Song at, like, a sixth grade talent show. So that's why I like that one. I mean, I, like, kind of know Stairway to Heaven a little bit. I don't know. It sounds like an 80s prom song or whatever. Yeah. But from what I've heard, that it's, like, a prom theme for kids, or it used to be. I don't know where I put them. I feel like Led Zeppelin have had... the most success, though, out of it, all those bands, I would say. There just seems to be something more iconic there. Allman Brothers, I don't really know. What do they even sing? I mean, I've heard the names. I know that one to two of them died. Someone just died this year.
Yeah, right, yeah. More recently, that's for sure.
More recently, yeah. Oh yeah, I don't know how much.
Well, that was a big thing for them is when... let's see. You know, and to answer the kind of go to the point of, you know, like Russell being based off one of the two of them, more likely Dwayne, because Dwayne did a jumping off the roof into a pool situation. So
yeah, that's what
one of the two of them died. I can't remember which one died. I mean, when they're really, I mean, right at the peak, you know, of their popularity and success. So it really, you know, it really threw them for the loop for a little bit, but they sure got back into it and were able to do more and even have offshoot bands like Dickie Betts, his side band, is very well known.
And then for Lynyrd,
at least amongst the more southern rock side of people.
Yeah, and then for Lynyrd Skynyrd, I mean, I know the name Freebird. I mean,
yeah,
I think Freebird I heard it.
Big one, yeah.
Right, I mean, Sweet Home Alabama, for some reason I just saw that. That surprised me that was their thing. So I feel like kind of both on what I like and who maybe was most successful, I'd probably put Eagles on top, and then Zeppelin, and then Lynyrd Skynyrd, and then Allman Brothers.
Okay.
That's what I would say. Or Allman Brothers, as I really want to call them.
I just had that in. Just came out telling behind the scenes of when we're recording this, but just one of the recent episodes was nicknamed was titled Allman Brothers because that was as you both may know, Crystal Beth or what she would call them as well. So it's not just one person that likes to call them Allman Brothers. So, and both of you now can go into more greater detail about your other projects. We can go Megan first here.
Yep. So, right now I am mainly just acting and writing, but I am planning to do a Bohemian Rhapsody Minute. So stay tuned for more about that. And if you want to find me on social media so you can stay up and up on that, feel free to connect with me on Facebook. Or you can also find me on Instagram under a Hummus Sapien, It's a pun, so it's spelled like hummus, the food. Apian, like the end of Homo sapiens. So feel free to give me a follow on there as well.
Yeah, so I have been guesting on a ton of podcasts. I've had a lot of fun watching new movies, listening to new music, like for the Weezer podcast. So I guess not as much fun. No, but
yeah.
No,
that was a low rating you gave.
I gave probably the lowest rating on the Weezer podcast. But yeah, been kind of doing a ton of things. I just completed, or it just came out, a whole week of celebrating Monty Python. I believe that's on
seated.com.
So just, I did all of the, or I was a guest on a podcast where we just did all of the movies and things like that. But I've watched different scary movies, more fun movies, and kind of have a lot of that going on. So if you want to find out on anything, you can obviously look me up on Facebook, Alice Lauren. Please message me first so I know where you heard me. My Twitter is Ali Mezh, A-L-I-M-E-Z-H. Not a pun. I wish it was. But yeah, definitely follow me, talk to me, and let me know where you heard me.
Yeah, that's great. I'll just go ahead and, for this show, talk a little bit about real quick, that you can find us also on certainly Twitter and Instagram, both at Almost Famous Men. On Facebook, we're there too. Facebook.com/AlmostFamousMinute. And we have our group where you can come in and really, really get into some good discussions at the Band AIDS Listener Society. And then something I really don't think I've been talking too much throughout the earlier parts of this show, but we certainly do have an email where if you have something even more secretive in a sense you want to communicate to me at AlmostFamousMinute@gmail.com is how you can reach me that way.
And if you follow Almost Famous, you can, just like me, get one of the people who are in Almost Famous to follow you on Twitter, which is really bizarre. Cool. Yeah, as soon as you posted that I was going to be on, Zach Ward, who played the, what I think, legendary Red Dog, followed me on Twitter. So that's another incentive.
Yeah, I feel like he might have been, he's one of the few actors so far that have kind of followed me back. But I did get, well before the show even started, you know, but I had the Twitter up and running. Cameron Crowe did follow me back, but he's followed like 2,000 people. I mean, it's not a huge number, but it's also not a small number, because comparatively, Watchmen Minute never had Zack Snyder follow it back, but he only follows like 20 people. So, but and then finally, for this show, and Feels Like Weezer, both shows are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where you can find a ton of other great rock and roll related podcasts, not just movies, much like Feels Like Weezer's doesn't have anything to do with movies, but there's some great ones there. So I'm so glad to have had you both on for this past four minutes, and maybe sometime later in a movie if there's something else you'd like to talk about in relation to it. We still have plenty of openings in the latter half, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So thank you both so much, and everyone should go check out their stuff. And we'll be back next week with Minute 37. And until then, it's all happening.
It's all happening.
I am a golden god! Yeah! Yes, yeah!
Queen of Hearts is always your best bet.
He's Lucas Hare.
He's Carrie Shale.
And this is a trailer for Is It Rolling Bob?
Talking Dylan.
We talk to interesting people like author Neil Gaiman.
Dylan is always more omnipresent than you believe. Part 3 of American Gods is called This Moment of the Storm. And of course, it's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall is another way of saying that.
Singer Billy Bragg.
I went to Hammersmith Odeon with Chrissy Hynde, and she totally spoiled the whole evening for me by going backstage beforehand and coming and saying to me, you must come back and say hello to Bob afterwards. He'd love to meet you. So I spent the entire gig thinking to myself, what am I going to say to Bob Dylan that, is, that doesn't sound like, hello, Bob, I really like your records? So I ran away.
Actor David Morrissey.
Their stories, they are, or, you know, you sit there and you think, God, this is taking me on a journey, not just by each track, but each album is such a chapter in a life.
Singer Barb Junger.
And suddenly something in the song, you go, bing, you go, oh yeah, that's today. That's the reality of the quality of his understanding of humanity. That kind of, that really relentless gaze.
The legendary Larry Ratso Sloman.
And that's when I talked to him about Sad Eyed Lady. And I said, you know, Bob, I always wondered, you know, in the chorus you say, my warehouse eyes, my Arabian drums. Do you mean eyes as a verb? Or is there a comma there? Is it two different images? And Sarah goes, yeah, I've always wondered that too. And Bob says, leave me alone, Rats.
Writer David Hepworth.
Honestly, the sweat was dripping off me because I was not getting very far. And you always think, I've got to get some quotes. I've got to get some lines or something. And you, of course, you can't get that out of Bob Dylan. It doesn't work like that. Mm. And the woman from the record company said to him, how's it going, Bob? And he says, I don't know. He keeps asking me questions.
And Dylan Authority, Michael Gray.
What he's doing there, Dylan, is he's breaking through the sort of oleaginous smear of coast-to-coast important American television, and he's busting through that and creating a live event, an authentic moment.
Is it Rolling Bob?
Talking Dylan.
His voice is really warm.
It's just that it ain't got no form.
But it's just like a dead man's last pistol shot, baby.